Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand. And it's a really wonderful place, this country, because you can go out, you can tell the truth, you can expose scumbaggery, and guess what happens? People threaten to sue you for defamation. Yeah, that's right. If you're exposing corruption, oh, it's a crime to accuse somebody of the truth. Gotta love this country, man. It's so third world, you know. It's almost like I feel like I'm gonna go to the bathroom in a bucket one of these days, you know. It's that bad. Or at least if you did any analysis of the media and how freaking pathetic they are, that would be the case. Now, considering that you do really have to look at the media in quite a serious light, criticize them when they fail, and give them props when they exceed, that's the reason why we've got my very special guest today here, the illustrious, the fabulous, and the various other nice adjectives, Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com and the USIndependent.com. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure and honor and what have you, and you probably give me a hell of a lot more credibility than I can get on my own. Now, we have a story to tell about the Ukraine. And when I say we, I mean you, because I don't know nothing about it. Not yet.
Well, I think it's very important. Recently, there was a video put out, a very beautiful young woman. Camera shots were all great. The editing was fabulous. It was very poignant. And it spoke to people's hearts. And see, that's how these situations begin and progress. And that's what I want to discuss today. I want to discuss the marketing behind the manufactured revolutions, because I don't think that people are aware that this is a product. This is how insidious these people are. Okay, we're dealing with CEOs. We're dealing with corporate heads, governments, state, multinational corporations, venture capitalists, investors, all the people who showed up at the World Economic Forum. We're talking about CEOs and investors. And so they have a product. Now, most of us think of a product as something that's physical, and there's a reason for that. It's because if you're not paying attention to the products that are non-physical, and you're thinking product, a physical object, then you're more likely to fall for the products that are ideas. And I want to give you an example. An idea whose time has come. It sounds real catchy. Does it, Vinny? It sounds great, right? An idea whose time has come.
Allegedly.
It sounds like a slogan, doesn't it?
I've heard it many, many times. In fact, I've heard it out Zeitgeist, in fact. That's what it reminds me of.
I just saw it recently on social media. Someone was passing along a meme. An idea whose time has come. What idea? Whose idea? Is it the idea that I remembered I lost my keys? Is it the idea that I want to celebrate my daughter's birthday on Saturday, even though it's on Tuesday? Is it the idea that I need to change my tire? Is it the idea of what we're going to have for dinner? What idea are we talking about? See, the reason why this comes out, this slogan, an idea whose time has come, the reason why it comes out is because we put our emotional idea of what the idea is in front of that. We finish their sentence for them. And so when we do that, an idea whose time has come becomes personal. And if anyone were to attack that idea whose time has come, then they would be attacking us personally. And they're attacking our right to exist. And of course we have a right to exist. We're here, aren't we? So we have this dilemma of marketing that we're falling under. And let me go back to that video that I mentioned. I watched it. It was very poignant. It touched my heart. I saw that it was very well produced. I saw that it was directed in a specific way. But it did not talk about the reason why Venezuela erupts. No one's talking about that. Ukraine erupts. Everyone's talking about that. They're not talking about the reason why. The reason why is why you're being marketed to. And the marketing has multifaceted effects. But Vinny, I don't want to take up, I don't want to railroad your show.
You do realize we have 3 hours and you can take up as much time as you want, because that's kind of what my show is about, is making sure the guest, it's almost like, yeah, pretend for a moment that it's your show, but you have some kind of slave here to, you know, work the board and what have you. You know, that's kind of how it works.
Okay. Let's talk about marketing, folks. Everything is marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing. The reason why is because it works. It's how the world goes round. When those gentlemen showed up at the World Economic Forum and they sat down, you had a room filled with people who were pitching an idea and people who would possibly be investing in that pitch. I watched a small couple of minutes of video with Bill Gates standing on stage speaking at the World Economic Forum. And he said, I can end poverty by 2035 if we get rid of people in impoverished countries. And one way that they could accomplish that
let me just get this straight. I'm going to end poverty by wiping out the poor. I guess that's one way to go about it. it'll be effective.
It is effective. See, folks, and I'm going to get into this as we go along, but we don't speak their language, and it puts us at a disadvantage. And what we understand about them is topical. And there's a reason for that, and I'm going to go into it, because it's all marketing and investing, folks. That's all it is. They market to you, you invest in their product. They make a return. They market to you, you invest in their product. They make a return, okay? It's marketing and investing. Everything is marketing and investing because we're dealing with CEOs, because that's how the world goes round. They market a product to you and you buy it, thereby investing in the product. And buying it means that you either hand over your fiat currency in exchange for a good or service, or you become part of the brand and you assimilate that idea and that concept into your own personal paradigm. It's a product. Either way, you've purchased it. So you've invested in their product. Now they've made a return. Now with the Ukraine, this seems to be their MO. And it's been going on since the early 1990s with Optor in Serbia. Now, this group was using a book. The book is From Dictatorship to Democracy, 198 Ways to topple your government using nonviolent resistance. And this book, written in the 1970s, has now become the blueprint since it was used in Serbia. And when the Optor movement used it, they were effective, and they caught the attention of the International Republican Institute. Now, Senator John McCain is on their board of directors, if that gives you a hint about who they are. And so they sent representatives in and got into the inner core of Optor, because remember, you might have heard this before, Optor was a nameless, faceless, leaderless group. Well, they did have a leader. They did have an inner circle. They did something very, very sneaky. They watched. They observed. They took notes. They didn't interact other than to ask questions about, why did you choose this tactic? Why did you choose this formation? Let me give you some of the tactics that they used, Optor used. They would bang pots and pans and march through the streets during the news broadcasts when the nightly news was on, so everyone would hear it. They would hand flowers to the police officers who would stand in their way at the beginning of the protest. And they strategically placed women, elderly, and children in front of the group that was protesting because they knew that police officers, now I know times have changed, but at the time they knew psychologically police officers were less likely to hit an elderly person, a child, or a woman. They turned mirrors on to the police officers that were standing in the way of the protesters to show the police officers what they looked like. They had the fist as their icon. Why? Because the fist represents power. And when you're speaking to a group who feel disenfranchised, and for really good reason, their homes are taken away, their jobs are taken away, their ability to pay for anything is taken away, not only from the fact that they lost their job, but their purchasing power is diminished. They feel utterly powerless. So you put a sign in front of them with a fist, and you tell them, you're going to march down these streets and you're going to take your power back. And those people say, yes, because I don't have my power. And so I'm going to go take it back from those guys who took it. Now, who are those guys again? They are telling you who they are. They point to the right direction. They organize a crowd and they go marching down the street. It is the new foreign policy that the U.S. government has been using because it is the most effective scheme that they've ever discovered. And it is extremely important that we pay attention to the Ukraine because they are taking honest, good people. How do you get good people to do bad things? How do you get good people to vie for their own tyranny?
Problem, reaction, solution.
You market to them. These fake revolutions are a product. It's a product of a marketing scheme. It is set up through the Hegelian dialectic. And I know that we've heard these terms before, problem, reaction, solution. Let me give you an example of how quick the Hegelian dialectic works. I was at a friend's house and she had a magazine. It was one of these girly magazines and I haven't seen one in a long time. So I picked it up and I was looking through it and here was this full page ad. And I'm thinking this must be worth like $15,000 or some exorbitant amount of money because it was just bam, right in your face. And it's a picture of a chocolate bar. And I'm looking at this chocolate bar and then off to my right, I notice it says hungry with a question mark. And I'm looking at this chocolate bar, and I said, well, yeah, actually, I am. And I look down to the bottom left, and there's the emblem, and it says Snickers. And I said, oh, dear Lord, there's the Hegelian dialectic all in one shot. And if I wasn't paying attention, I would have answered the question yes, and I would have gotten in my car and go bought myself a Snickers. Now, I know the kind of garbage that is in that food, but I felt hungry. My stomach growled a little bit. Why? Because it speaks to a base, instinctual, deep, deep part of our psychological programming. It's base need for food. its base need for love, its base need for acceptance, its base need to defend your right to exist. Now, part of the pitch, when it comes to these fake revolutions, the logos, the catchphrases, the icons, the recruitment of the public, there's this little trick that salesmen use. And I don't know, Vinny, you used to be a telemarketer, so you might have come across this a little bit, but there's a little
I was a little bit different to most salesmen, in which case I was just so freaking genuine and such a nice guy that I got people to trust me within moments. It's actually kind of served me well as a radio show host.
Well, you're just a wonderful guy. So you're just that's probably why it didn't work out, because these people are sharks. But they do this little trick. They repeat to you how you feel. They listen to what you say, and they pick out the emotion behind the words. And they only address the emotion. Because psychologically, on an unconscious level, you will then become in accord with them. And so now you're more likely to agree with the next thing they say. And the next thing they say is part of their sales pitch. They go right back into the pitch. It's called looping. If you go off script and you start asking them questions that they're not prepared to answer, all they do is loop you back around. And so you're in the loop with them. And think of it as the infinity symbol on its side.
Oh my God. You know what this reminds me of? Talking to cops. You know, do you have weed on you? No, sir. Do you have weed on you? No, sir. Do you have weed on you? You know what? The fact that you keep asking me that exact same question means I should probably not give you the answer you want. So again, no, sir. That's
absolutely
the looping, isn't it?
That is. And what you did is brilliant, because if you're not participating, then they have no other choice than to keep reiterating their point. But your non-participation, your non-compliance in the loop keeps them. You are adversarial, and they are adversarial to you. The reason why you want to keep them in that state is because you retain your power. That's where your power is, in your non-compliance. That's why I've talked about non-compliance. It's not popular. There's a lot of groups out there who are saying, hey, I know you lost your home and you lost your job and your babies are hungry and your kids need new shoes and you really can't afford to buy them for them. Hey, we're organizing this protest. Grab your pitchfork and your fire and let's go storm Pennsylvania Avenue. And it speaks to you in your heart, in that base place that I was talking about. Because remember, the salesman does not speak to you, speaks to your emotions. Doesn't matter what you're saying. They're listening and picking out the most obvious emotion, and they're going to bring it back to you and loop it back, because as soon as they get you to agree that that's how you feel, they've got you. Once you are in accord with them, you will do what they say. Politicians do this. Salesmen do this. Bankers on Wall Street do this. Radio hosts do this. Celebrities do this. Public speakers do this. That is how they hypnotize you. That is how they get you to do bad things. Good people doing bad things, doing things that are detrimental to them. It's a loop. It's an infinity symbol on its side. And as long as you participate, then they have you. And that's why this, what's going on in the Ukraine, is so important. So I want to get back to Optor and the International Republican Institute, because what they learned from this movement, they took with them and they started replicating it all across the Middle East. And they had this brilliant scheme. They use the obviousness of the destruction that they've caused through economic terrorism and social terrorism. And the people are already beaten and they're looking for a savior. They're looking for someone to help them. And here comes along one person or one group who speaks to that and tells them what to do.
I know. This is actually why I am probably the least biggest fan of the Messiah complex. Nobody's going to save you. You know, that's my motto. Ain't nobody going to save you. And what happens is most people believe that they will have a savior. You know, it's like either Jesus will save you, or Muhammad will save you, or somebody equivalent in terms of religious power and fervor, like Barack H. Obama will save you. It's insane, because I think that the entire mentality behind a savior complex has been imposed on people to ensure that they do not try and save themselves from the scumbag who's telling them that I'm going to save you, when in actual fact he won't save you. He'll just do something that rhymes with it, like enslave you.
You want to know how they do it? See, we always hear about this. Everything that Vinny said is absolutely true. But I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to take you a little bit deeper, and I'm going to tell you how they do it. Because we have to know how they do it. That way we can choose consciously to stop complying. And if we stop complying, their whole system will fall apart. I promise you, it's true. You can't have a fight with someone who isn't fighting with you. You're just standing there fighting, and nobody else is there. Maybe a couple onlookers are laughing, but if you're standing there arguing with someone and they're not participating in the argument, or they've walked away or in the process of leaving, you are an idiot. We have to stop participating in our tyranny. And this is how they do it. Marketing. They know exactly how you feel. They're listening to everything that you say. They're reading all of your text messages and your emails. They have itemized receipts of everything that you purchase, so they know where you are. You're buying trendy jewelry with RFID chips, so they can follow you down the street. You've got a chip to pin a credit card in your wallet, so they can GPS locate you and watch your wallet walk down the street while you go shopping. They know you very well. They have, it's beyond Nielsen ratings. It's beyond the Gallup polls. They're monitoring every facet of your existence. They know what you want. And remember, we're talking about corporate CEOs. Now, corporations and corporate CEOs, rather, they know that if they give the public, or their customers, rather, what they want, the customers will do whatever they can to help that corporation out. So the corporation just has to figure out, what does the customer want? Well, we all want freedom, don't we? We all want our freedom of speech. We want our constitutional republic. We want our Second Amendment. We don't want to be subjected to police state and seizures of any nature. We don't want corrupt politicians in our government.
You could have fooled me, because the general public doesn't seem to follow that line of reasoning.
Here's where the spell of marketing comes in. The reason why nothing is changing is because we're not making conscious decisions. We're making decisions based on our emotion. We see a politician and he looks good and he's got soft eyes. And that hair is just right. And he smiles and he says what I want him to say. He says what I want to hear. It's like he's reading my mind. I love that man. Boom. I'm a customer for life. It's that easy. A little bit of makeup, a little bit of hairdressing, a little bit of practicing with a public speaker. A little bit of neuro-linguistic programming. Bam, you're a customer for life. It doesn't matter what they do. You ever wonder why all of a sudden a senator or a representative from the House or a president, they've done horrible, or a governor, you know, it doesn't matter. They've done horrible throughout their entire stint. And now when it's election time, they do this wonderful thing. It's because you will forget about all of the horrible things that they did. You will forgive them if you can't forget. Because whatever it is that they're doing right now to make up for it is going to touch you in an emotional way. And if you're unconscious, then you're going to react to that emotion.
You know, it's funny because me and my friend, we did a jam one time. We came up with a song called Scumbaggery. And the chorus goes something like, scumbaggery it came back with me. I went overseas and came back with it. And I will deceive and make you forget scumbaggery.
One of the things that salesmen do is that they disappear. It's just like a narrator. You go to a theater and the gentleman comes out in front of the curtain and he introduces everything and he's in a top hat and or something that will catch your eye, something that will allow you to feel comfortable with him and yet see him as a authoritative figure throughout the play. And he introduces it and then he steps back and the curtain's drawn and there you go, there's the show. His whole purpose is to get you into a hypnotic state so that you will take in all the information that you're just about to see. And that's what Bill O'Reilly's job is. Do you think Bill O'Reilly really thinks or feels that way?
Bill O'Reilly used to be a JFK conspiracy theorist. Did you know that?
He used to. Well, I remember when he was on Hard Copy, and that was a tabloid journalism show.
Huh.
Okay. Bill O'Reilly is an actor playing a part. The part that he's playing is this adversarial guy that you just hate. But you hate him so much you can't stop watching him. It's like a train wreck. And he gets great ratings and he's going to continue doing it. Howard Stern, same thing.
Isn't he the top rated show in America?
Yes. He appeals to all of the base needs that we have. Sex, food, and our right to exist.
He's the Snickers of journalism.
Listen, folks, everyone that you know, including yourself, is under the influence of one of four things at all times. Now, it could be a combination of any of them, but it's one of four things. Drugs, alcohol, rage, or fear. And if it's fear, you are easy to market to. That's why they keep us in fear. There might be a bomb on an airplane, the DHS said this past week. You got to look out for the bombs on the airplanes. We don't know. We got an alert, an anonymous source somewhere. You got to love those anonymous sources. Because at Fox News, when they say anonymous sources or some sources say, that's their cue that they're giving you their opinion.
Yeah, they're making stuff up.
They're making stuff up, except you don't know it because you don't think to yourself that the guy sitting in front of you in as a newscaster is actually a salesman pitching you a sales pitch. You wouldn't think of it that way because you think of sales as something different. But listen, folks. Everything is marketing and investing. These are corporate CEOs. And I was shocked. You know, I'll go back to Bill Gates at the World Economic Forum. I was shocked because I don't know about you, Vinny, but I always thought of Bill Gates because of the way that it's portrayed in media. And I mean all media in general. That he's this type of person that he would just make a phone call and something would happen. Do you get that feeling that he's got that much power?
Especially if the phone call was to the bank to say, hey, can I have like one of my billions just to give to this particular charity over there? Oh, yeah, sure, Mr. Gates. What does that charity do? Well, it gives toxic vaccines to those black people in Africa that I don't like and sterilizes them. All right, no problem, Mr. Gates. Coming right your way.
Exactly. But here's Bill Gates standing on stage asking these investors for money. Why would he be asking them for money? He's got all the money in the world. I mean, wouldn't he invest in his own project? Well, he is. He does. He puts up some of the money. But see, these guys realize that money makes everything happen. And so the more money you have and the more people you have involved, the bigger your project is going to be.
Not to mention he's Bill Gates, so he could make it all happen by himself. So if he says, I'm Bill Gates and I'm doing this, do it with me. You've got money too, don't you? And they go, yes, I do. Oh my God, I could work with Bill Gates. Wow, man, amazing. Where do I sign? How do I give away my life savings to destroy the earth? Please, Mr. Gates, give me a shot.
I just want the ability to waste my money on killing people, just like you. Thank you. Thank you.
Did I overreact?
You know, there is a necessity for some theatrics. I understand. What I'm saying is very, very intense. And so I appreciate your comic relief. But here we have Bill Gates asking for money from his friends. Maybe they've invested in what he's done before. Maybe they've never invested. He knows that they're pre-qualified because they're sitting in those seats. You can't have any less than maybe a couple of $1 billion sitting in a bank account somewhere. You have to be qualified to sit in those seats. So he knows he's going to get a return. Here he is on stage pitching his idea. Hey, ending poverty, 2035, let's invest in vaccines, let's go kill off the underdeveloped nations and the people who survive, we'll stick them in megacities. And oh, by the way, here's my good friend Al Gore, and he's going to explain to you how we can stop global warming by killing off people. So we're kind of in accord. And oh, there's our good friend Matt Damon sitting in the third row laughing it up with some of our friends. He was just all over Facebook telling everyone about civil disobedience. And here he is, our good friend Matt Damon. Isn't that funny? Let me talk about Matt Damon for a minute.
I can't hear anybody talk about Matt Damon without that phrase coming into my head. Those the Matt Stone and Trey Parker just ruined his life.
It is a great film if you get a chance. Team America: World Police. It is absolutely fabulous. Please watch the director's cut edition because it's got some extras. It's really incredible. And I never thought I would be interested in a movie with strictly marionettes, but it's definitely worth it. Matt Damon was all over social media as a new guru. He was reading from Howard Zinn, who has passed away. And Howard Zinn produced a book, The People's History of the United States of America. Great book. Read it. Matt Damon's reading from it about civil disobedience. And everybody jumped on the bandwagon. Why? Because the celebrity is saying what you want to hear, speaking to your heart, saying things that you're thinking. You don't feel so alone anymore. If Matt Damon is talking about it, you must not be crazy.
The name Russell Brand comes to mind as well.
Absolutely. The lead singer of Korn comes to mind. Let me give you guys a little hint. When you are accustomed to a certain lifestyle, and I'm not placing any value judgment on it, okay? We all are accustomed to the lifestyle that we live. If we weren't, we wouldn't be living that particular lifestyle. So it's up to you. You want a better lifestyle, you change it yourself. But the lead singer from Korn is accustomed to a certain lifestyle. And there is a lot of money being moved into alternative sources of media.
I've always found it ironic, the multimillionaires raving on about the plight of the poor. I was just like, I don't see how that works.
It doesn't, except it's a marketing tool. And let me explain this. And I'm going to pick on the lead singer of Korn just because he's the latest in a long line of anybody that you have seen who is an actor or an actress or belongs to some questionable charity group or any of these celebrities that you see in front of you. Trust me, this is all about marketing. Because there's so much money being moved into another source of media and all of those dollars are sitting there, it makes sense that someone who left their band and changed their entire life, became a Christian, would then need a new audience. Now, I have heard the song that he put out. I listened to it last night. It sounds exactly like old Korn. Korn before. I didn't mean anything derogatory.
Is it new Korn now? Is it GMO Korn?
I'm not sure. Well, here's the sales pitch. The guy's getting a little bit low in the pocket. And he sees that there's a group of people that if he just changes his MO just a little bit, changes the words of his songs just a little bit, adds in maybe a catchphrase like Illuminati, then he can speak to a whole new audience who have lots of money in their pocketbooks. And guess what? If he takes a chance, if he creates a consequence, and I'll explain what consequences are because they're not what you think. But if he takes that chance and he reinvents himself, then he could have an opportunity open up that would be lucrative for him. And guess what? He took a chance and he won. Jackpot, ching, ching, ching. House wins. You're going to go out and buy his album now. You're going to help him stay in the lifestyle that he's accustomed to. Is he speaking about 9/11 truth? Sure. Is he saying anything radical? Absolutely not. There's lots of things that people have said about 9/11 truth. People say that we need to have an open investigation. There are questions that still need to be answered about 9/11. Yes, that's an actual true statement. But that statement actually said nothing. That is one of those catchphrases, those logos that people say, the celebrities, they say them because they know that you're going to finish the sentence for them. And the people who do finish the sentence for them, those people are customers now.
May I postulate a theory here? New World Order knows that they're being exposed, and so they're recruiting celebrities to start talking truth, a kind of thing, just to divert people down tracks that don't matter so that they don't continue going on to the real truth and listening to the real commentators who are actually exposing the New World Order scumbaggery. Is that about right?
Well, it's close. You're sniffing around. You got to keep sniffing a little bit more. Because here's how sneaky this thing actually is. There is no such thing as bad press. Okay? When you are marketing a product, there is no such thing as bad press. Let me give you a case in point. There's a new movie out called The Wolf of Wall Street. Now, I watched this film with my husband, and I'm still disturbed by it. It's disturbing. It's about a gentleman who figured out that he could steal money from investors by upselling penny stock, and became a multimillionaire, drug addict, hedonist, and then ended up in prison, not for the crimes that he committed, but for a lesser sentence because he ratted out his friends. Now, this is no one to look up to, but there was one point in the movie that, man, it really hit me hard. He was all excited because he was about to get a woman, a journalist from Forbes magazine, come into his office, and he had everything set up just perfectly. And he told all of his salesmen on the sales floor, keep everything clean. When the woman showed up, he took her around everywhere, showed her every nook and cranny of the office, sat for photo ops. He was so excited. And then the article came out in Forbes magazine, and it was a hit piece. And he went ballistic. He goes off on his wife. He's driving to work. He's talking to his other members of board of directors, and he's going off on them. He can't believe it. He almost crashes his car. He gets up the stairs and goes to the elevator, and the elevator opens up on the floor, and there is a mob of banking salesmen, junior brokers, who want to work for him. They saw the article, and he now has a mob of men who are willing to do whatever he wants because they believe that he is the one in the group that has succeeded the most. And again, I'm bringing you back to your base needs, your base emotions. We all have this innate need to survive. And as social creatures, we look to the most successful in our group as the answer. And I'll give you an example of this. Yesterday, I was watching some television with my son. I decided to put a movie, Caveman, with Ringo Starr and Shelley Long. It's an old film from when I was a kid. And these cavemen see this lizard. It's like a giant, it's like a claymation giant lizard, and he's going to eat the cavemen. Some of them climb trees. Some of them hide behind rocks. Some of them push the other guys who are in the tree out, and then they have to go find another tree, and everyone's scrambling. And then the lizard grabs a hold of this one guy's leg and drags him over and picks him up and takes him off. And they all come down out of the tree and from behind the rocks, and they realize their friend is gone. And they look at each other and make sure each other's okay, and then they turn around and start walking away. This is indicative of that base need to survive. Whatever that guy who became lunch for the lizard did, it didn't work because he's lunch for the lizard. What they did to survive and not be lunch for the lizard worked. So they're going to replicate that. And the leader of their group, the big guy who pushed everybody out of the tree and got to the top, they're going to mimic everything that he does because he is big and strong and he has the most beautiful woman waiting for him back at the cave. So whatever he's doing, it must be right because he's got all the good, all the spoils, all the best, and they want whatever he's got. And they're willing to be his entourage. They're willing to be his fans. They're willing to just support him from afar. However close they can get to him, they're willing to take it because it means more women, more food.
It's when funny because it occurs to me that we're still those cavemen. It's just the caves have like 7 rooms, electricity, underfloor heating and whatnot. And the women aren't wearing animal skins. Well, in some cases they are. But, yeah, and actually in most cases they're kind of not wearing hardly anything at all in terms of, like, when they're walking around in public. I don't know. In fact, what happened, right, is I think people forgot what their base principles are. They don't even know who they are as an animal, okay? As a human animal. They don't understand their animal instincts, and as a result of them not knowing what their animal instincts are and having other people who are powerful and wealthy and engaging in scumbaggery know what those animal instincts are, they manipulate them, right? Just to make sure that they can control you, not entirely dissimilar from how a caveman would club you over the head and drag you into a cave and rape you. You know, that's kind of it. They're raping us in our minds. They're skull fracking us.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's the path of least resistance. If they give you what you want, you will do whatever they say. If they tell you that if you join our group, you can fight for your freedom, then you will do whatever the group says because you know that whatever that is, that's going to help you get your freedom. No matter how ridiculous, no matter how it goes against what you know to be right or wrong, you will join the group because you want to survive. You don't want to be the caveman who got eaten for lunch by the lizard. You want to be as close as you can next to that big guy so you know that you're able to survive. And the other thing you're going to do is you're going to mimic everything that guy does. You're going to copy his hair, the way he dresses, the way he speaks. You're going to read the books that he reads. You're going to go to the websites he goes to, watch the movies. You're going to do everything. You're going to buy all the gossip columns, all those tabloid journalists that are writing these articles that are really just propaganda hit pieces, but who cares? It's sensational. We love sensation. It speaks to a base need. Everyone wants to be famous. That's why we have reality television. It saves them a lot of money, I'll have to say, because they don't have to pay the actors and they don't have to rent the studios.
I was on Clint Richardson's show, actually, The Corporation Nation, and he was working behind the scenes on those things, and he got a hold of the 24-hour cameras that they've got. They go to hotels, okay? like the shooting ends for the day, and they just go to their freaking hotel rooms, you know, the minibars and all of that kind of stuff. It's a total fraud.
It's absolute fraud. But everyone who posted those pictures of the guy from Duck Dynasty, you fell for it. It's not just that they were passing through the 2014 fiscal year for the NDAA while you were all, you know, oh my God, Duck Dynasty. But that whole thing was marketing because their ratings were falling. And these people, they were millionaires before they got on the show. They grew some beards. They're playing a part. They don't actually enjoy that. It's disgusting. But they do it because who cares? So you got to stand in some mud and you got to do some gross things. Who cares? You're making millions of dollars. They know that people want the American dream. That's what we're all fighting for. We're fighting, we call it fighting for liberty. We call it fighting for a constitutional republic. But what we're really fighting for is that American dream. To have a business, to have a home, that's comfortable, to be comfortable in our expenses, to not have to worry, to have enough. We're not fighting for a constitutional republic because we don't know what that is. I mean, we've heard the words put together before, and we've seen some pictures, and we've heard some topical explanations as to what that is. And so we think we know what it is, because the person who gave us that topical information was of authority. Let me give you an example of this. And I'm going to give you an example of the sales pitch in media, because this is very important. These people who are celebrities in media, they're salesmen. They're pitching you a product. Their product is them, because the people who paid money during the commercial breaks want a return. They want a return on the money that they invested. So that person is now a product. And here's how they keep themselves in business and keep you a lifetime customer. I was watching an interview with a gentleman who has been speaking about the markets for a very long time, and I'm not going to mention his name because I want you to understand the information. I don't want you to gravitate towards some idea in your mind about who it might be or what they might be about. It's not about that. I want you to listen to the pitch. This gentleman was talking about emerging markets and how Turkey's at one time getting an influx of millions and millions and millions of dollars to build up their infrastructure. And now their currency has been devalued by 20% and it's going to crash. And the markets are going up and down and up and down and up and down. And the dollar's going to crash. Look at the markets. It's going up and down and up and down. Listen, folks, remember I said we're all under the influence of four things: drugs, alcohol, rage, and fear. Let's go back to fear. When you look at something like the stock market in an isolated incident, like in one day, it's absolutely terrifying. It's like a roller coaster ride, up and down and up and down. And oh my God, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Am I going to lose money? Am I going to gain money? And then the bell goes off and everyone goes silent and the last numbers come in and everybody's either cheering or they're praying. It's like a roller coaster. They found out in the early 1920s that they could build these machines, and they were shoddy in construction at the time. And let me tell you, every single time someone got on these things, they died. It wasn't just every day or every month. Every time someone got on, a group of people would get on these new roller coasters that were just coming out in the early 1920s. People died every time they rode them. Someone died. I can't say that enough. We still ride roller coasters. It came from a place and time where people wanted the thrill of dying without actually dying. And some people were able to grab a hold of that and survive. Others weren't. But they were willing to pay money for that thrill. And that's what it is on the stock market. Up and down, up and down, up and down. They're fearful. It's exhilarating and it's terrifying all at the same time. It's a roller coaster ride. These people are addicted. Gamblers are addicted. When a gambler loses, in his mind, it's not that he lost. It's that he nearly won. And if he tries again, he might nearly win again. And if he tries again, he might nearly win again. And do I have to keep repeating myself? So the stock market, when you look at it from an isolated incident from one day, it looks terrifying. And the design in the media to show you these isolated incidents one day at a time is the design of the marketing to keep people involved. Because the big guys who have the money, the really big guys, like the guys who invested in the emerging markets and gave Turkey its ability to build up its infrastructure, the same guys who have now pulled out. Do you know why they pull out? They pull out because it's more advantageous for them economically, monetarily, to do so. And as they're pulling out, the small-time investors are watching, the big guys. and they move over to where the big guys are and start pouring their money in there. And when the big guys drop that commodity and move over to the left, the small guys then follow along. And when the big guys drop that and move back over to the right, the small guys follow along because they think that the big guys know something that they don't. They think the big guys have an insider tip that they don't. They don't realize that the big guys are doing it on purpose. Another thing that people don't realize when they look at the markets every single day is that you cannot see a trend if you're looking at an isolated incident. In fact, you have to go back 6 months to a year at least to be able to see a trend, to be able to say, wow, this currency is actually degrading. It's being devalued. It's falling. And then you would compare that graph to another graph, to another graph, and then see 10, 20, 30 years where you can actually see the devaluation of a currency. But every single day, you can't see that. Every week, you can't see that. And the predictions, the reason why the predictions don't come true is because the prediction itself is inconsequential. Remember an idea whose time has come? Remember how they put out the logo and we finished their sentences for them? That's exactly what you're seeing right there. The prediction comes out and it captures that fear, that roller coaster thrill. And people make decisions based on those emotions. Remember? They're speaking to your base emotion. So they're getting you to make decisions based on how you feel. And those decisions are always the ones that we regret. Always. I hear a lot of talk about the revolution. I hear a lot of talk here domestically about an American spring. I don't hear much talk about the day after. The day after is not the sale. The sale is the revolution itself. We'll deal with that bridge when it comes to it. But that's the boring part. That's the reorganization. Ah, but if we look at the Arab Springs and we look at all of these fake revolutions, including if you want to go real time and look at what's going on in the Ukraine and what's happening in Venezuela, you see that they have things in place. They have stability operations that they put in place. This is DynCorp, Blackwater, mercenaries. They show up in that country and they stabilize the population. What does that mean? It means that they put a gun in those people's face and say, you will comply or you're not going to be alive anymore. Get it?
I've got a gun in my face. Suddenly I feel a lot more stable, you know?
Absolutely. Sure, officer. I'll do whatever you want. You just... Can I make you a coffee?
Sure. That sounds like fun.
Stability operations are installed, and then they can install their patsy. Now, again, guys, we got to expand our idea of products because we've been blindsided by the one guy patsy. You know, the Saddam Hussein and Castro over in Cuba. We've been suckered into thinking that a patsy is one guy. But these guys are smart, okay? They do focus groups. They study. They know exactly what you want. And they know that you don't trust one guy, but you'll trust a group of guys. So what they've been doing is installing transitional councils. Wow. I felt like George Bush Jr. for a minute. Transitional councils. The Syrian National Transitional Council. There is one. It is comprised of people that have been chosen by the Saudi Arabian government and the UN and the EU and the State Department under Hillary Clinton. And they are waiting to sit down as soon as Assad is completely removed. And these people have no intention of returning that country to its original glory. Look at Libya. Anybody remember Libya under Gaddafi? You've seen the pictures. I have. And then you see Libya now. And now they're doing these comparison shots in the Ukraine of Kiev before, Kiev after. And what they don't talk about is that there are factions already in there. And we're hearing snippets of it. We heard a snippet of a conversation that Victoria Nuland did not intend to go public, or so we're told. Remember, folks, this is marketing. And I should probably explain something at this point. A salesman, a public speaker, a well-trained celebrity or personality will only show weakness when it is advantageous to the pitch. If it's going to get you to buy, they'll cry. If it's going to get you to buy, they'll show you a picture of their dead child. Whatever it takes, they'll do it. And so we hear this information from Victoria Nuland, and we are angry. The U.S. has just admitted, inadvertently, quote unquote, that they are using diplomats, U.S. diplomats, to incite riots on behalf of the Ukrainian opposition. This is the IRI. This is how they do it. This is a much easier way to take over a country. And let me tell you about what's going on with the Ukraine. The Ukraine has a lot of natural gas and has a lot of petrol. And the Ukraine, which spills out into the Black Sea, has an area that is a major import-export area. It controls a lot of what goes in and out from Russia, from these pipelines, out to be exported for monetization. So if you're going to take over an area that really sticks it to Vladimir Putin, you're going to pick someplace like the Ukraine. We also saw last year, or maybe even 2012 now,
May I intervene here? How close is the Ukrainian border to, say, Syria?
Oh, this is much farther away.
It's not like on the border of the Black Sea or something like that to allow a disruption of the movement of Russian ships, perhaps through the straits.
Well, see, this is an import-export of natural gas and petrol area. Syria is smack dab in the middle of a pipeline that is supposed to be built between Iraq, Iran, and Syria. It's called the Iraq-Iran-Syrian pipeline. And they are going to extract all of the natural gas from the fields in Iran, which it's plentiful. And they are going to push it through this pipeline out to the Mediterranean Sea and become a formidable supplier for European and Asian nations. Israel does not want that because they just discovered they have the Leviathan Basin, which is 200 years that they've guesstimated worth of natural gas. So they want to extract that and become the world's leader of export natural gas so that they can control all of our energy needs. Now, how can I say that? Well, in 2012, at a UN summit of climate change in Copenhagen, they decided that petrol is out. No more subsidies for oil companies. Petrol is out. Natural gas is cleaner, safer for the environment, safer for global climate change, or whatever they're calling it. I wish they would just call it climate engineering and just be done with it and get over it, but they're not ready to come clean yet. So this is all about a switch. Now, who is still running on oil? Who is dependent on oil? OPEC and the countries that make up OPEC, like Saudi Arabia. The reason why I'm picking on Saudi Arabia is because they have been funding terrorist factions trained by the CIA in Chechnya for a very long time. The Ukraine is a new prize. If they've got to move to natural gas and they're not going to get subsidies for oil anymore, then they need to control both commodities. Why both? Because if they control the supply of both, they control the demand of either.